the Roll Con Show with Anna DeVellantes. She is Anna DeVellantes. I am not Roll Con. Brian Noonan in for Ro today, and it is time for our weekly visit, the Keller Business Managing Your Future, a segment with Susie Schmidt, or Susan Schmidt, as you like to say, sponsored by DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management.
Ro named her Susie Sunshine, and we're hoping maybe that, Susan, you can bring us some economic sunshine today, but that jobs report, I think, is dominating the headlines, and 38,000 jobs way, way lower than most
the
were expecting.
The number today was a little scary.
Sure.
But we have other positive news this week, and I think the market's reaction to it, we saw the market actually act pretty rationally today, and I think that's an important sign. So don't get too worried about the low, low number. It was 38,000. The market was expecting about 160,000. That's a huge difference, even if you account for some 40,000 jobs that got lost with the Verizon strike that happened.
And they're back at work now. So.
They're back at work. But let's just, even if we took them out, we'd still need to get like 120,000. We're still at 38. And even if you count for, you know, maybe a 40 to 60,000 swing factor, which they have on the data, it's not always that accurate, you're still low. So it was just surprising to everyone. It was really shocking. We've had this happen in the past. We had some outlier numbers. There was a month that was down in 2012, 2013. March of 2015, we had these one-month numbers that were just way out of whack, and it came back. What's more concerning is that we've seen this jobs number trend down the last 3 months.
Yeah.
So the first quarter, the average was about 203,000, and we've been looking for about 160,000 the last couple months, and it's just soft. So that trend is a little concerning. But big picture, let's go back and think about Monday. Monday, we saw really good consumer spend number for April. And so the consumer was out spending. You spend when you feel good about the economy. You spend when you feel like you have the money to spend. So that was positive. Thursday, just yesterday, we saw a really good manufacturing report for May. And so people feel like industry's okay. Slow to moderate growth is a practical way to look at our economy right now, and I think it's still relatively healthy.
But the other thing, Susan, we were talking about, and Brian and I were mentioning this earlier, that at 4.7%, the unemployment rate, you would think, oh, yay, that looks really great. People have jobs. But then the other piece of this jobs report was that people were dropping out of the workforce altogether.
Right, so 500,000 people dropped out of the labor force. And that's concerning. When you get the jobs report, the unemployment rate these days, I think, is very misleading because we're approaching sort of a mature labor market. So we don't have a lot of jobs coming on. We don't have a lot of change until we saw this week in the labor force itself. And so we're starting to see when people come out of the labor force, it can make a big difference in that number. So the unemployment rate, I would say ignore it for the moment. You know, recognize that it changes because of that. People are saying, I'm not looking for work. At the same time, we saw average hourly earnings actually go up 2.5% year over year. Now, that's pretty good. And we've seen the quit ratio stay high. So people quit a job when they feel like they can get another job, and that hasn't faltered at all. So there are other signs that are confidence building in that area. It's just very confusing, this 38,000 number.
See how she does that, Brian?
She
gives us some hope, some happiness, even when there's bad data.
What are we supposed to look for now? The Fed, a lot of experts said, well, the jobs report, the Fed is going to maybe raise the short-term interest rate or change it. But with the jobs report trend, how do you think that's going to affect that?
Well, so here's how I think you should picture the next couple of months. The Fed meets in June, and they're going to meet again in July. And when they meet in June, that's June 15th, and then July, it's July 27th. When they meet in June, they were going to consider, as they do at every meeting, should we raise interest rates? Is now the time? Up until today, the market had actually come to terms with them raising interest rates. And Anna, you and I have talked about this in the past. Mm-hmm. If they raise interest rates, it's because the Fed thinks that the economy is on good, solid footing, and it should be perceived as a positive. So for the last couple of weeks, the market kind of finally got their psychology right and recognized that it would be okay for the Fed to raise rates. Now that we've had this poor number for the jobs report today, the expectation for any change to happen in June, in the meeting that's just 2 weeks away, has really come off the table. No one thinks that it's going to be changed in June. We might see a change in July. That's still a possibility because, again, this could be an outlier number. The other factors are still pretty positive. And Janet Yellen is speaking Monday. She's going to be speaking in Philadelphia at the World Affairs Council. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see how she comments about the job number today. And expectations are that she is going to repeat her phrasing, which they like to do because the minute she changes one word, people panic. But she'll repeat her phrasing that, you know, an interest rate increase in the coming months is probable. And I still think it is. We probably won't see it in June just to make sure that no one's shocked. But I think July is still on the table and then certainly by year end because the rest of our data, assuming this is just an outlier data point, which can happen, the rest of our data is okay.
Well, we did have another good piece of good news that came out today. Home sales and sales of new homes and construction went up to what, an 8-year high?
Yes, and so there we go. Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome, Susan.
Another piece of good news.
Sure.
Right? And the other thing that's happening is we're seeing house price appreciation. So new homes, we're seeing new home construction. Housing is a theme we've been talking about. We've seen that in consumer spend, what people are spending on. That's very positive for the economy overall. It also goes along with we're seeing some very solid personal income gains. And so, again, that's a positive for the economy. People are feeling good. So we've got these other themes going on that I think are very positive. And I think the market, actually, for once, and I'm always talking about how the market doesn't like surprises and can be very irrational, mm-hmm. but today the market actually acted rationally. And so it didn't panic at this low jobs number. I think it really focused on the other data points that have been coming through because you'll notice that the market didn't really sell off on this.
Well, there was a lot of bonds bought today while the stocks were being sold, right?
Well, there was, but it reversed during the day. So we're down a little bit on the day, but it wasn't this shock reaction. If this had happened a year ago or 2 years ago, you could have seen a 5% move. We didn't really see that. That's not where we closed. We're pretty, on average, there's always a little bit of swing in the market. We're down a little bit. This, to me, is not the knee-jerk reaction that an irrational market would have put forth.
And what's going on with oil and the dollar? Those seem to be making headlines today, too.
Well, oil's important because OPEC just met, and I think OPEC did what everyone expected them to do. They all got in a room, they all sat down to talk, none of them could agree with each other, and they left saying, we can't come to any conclusions. So OPEC is trying to meet to say, we're going to cap supply. We're not going to produce anymore. We're going to limit production here, which is at a very high level, so that doesn't help all that much. But Iran, who just got released from the sanctions because of its nuclear program on it, Iran's trying to build up its oil program once again. It's now got freedom to participate. It wants a cash flow from that, so it doesn't want to limit its production. Saudis, they want to control everything. They don't want to give up market share. Unless Iran agrees, they're not going to agree. So they can sit down and pretend to have a conversation, but no one's going to agree to anything in those meetings. We knew OPEC was meeting this week. There was a lot of speculation in the market on what's going on with that. As it turns out, we saw some intraday change in oil, but nothing got decided. So oil holding at $49.50 a barrel is a good sign. And again, back to the U.S. dollar. Strength in the U.S. dollar is frequently paired with oil prices these days. They kind of move in tandem. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that the dollar is actually at a good level. So, you know, we were worried about the dollar being too strong a currency. That's actually settled. And when you think about this, the pendulum always goes too far in one direction and then the other. I think the dollar probably got a little ahead of itself. It's coming back in. And the strength of the dollar relative to Europe and Asia is actually, I think, at a pretty good level right now, which gives comfort to the market.
So you've mentioned before that oil is a roller coaster, and people get all caught up in oil. But for the everyday person, the main thing they want to know is how much is gas going to cost? Summer's here. People are getting in their cars. Is there a way to look at the indecision of OPEC today and say, all right, how is this going to affect the average driver throughout the next few months?
Well, I think it's going to mean that we really don't have a huge spike up in the price of oil in the next couple of months. If they limit supply, then usually there's less to go around, so people have to pay more to get it.
Right.
You'd see that spike up in price. You're always going to see the prices creep up, and last weekend was the start of it. Memorial Day weekend, prices and gas creep up because you're going into the high driving season. This is when everybody piles everything into the back of the car and drives off to see grandma three states away. So this is typical to see that seasonal rise, but I think if you look at it and go out over the next couple of months, it should stay pretty stable. I don't think it's going to come back down because, again, we're seeing oil hang at that $49, $50 a barrel level, but I don't think it's going to go up a lot either because the OPEC nations, who are our big producers, just can't agree on anything.
Yeah, there's another story that sort of has to do with oil, Susan, that I want to ask you about. The investment from Saudi Arabia, $3.5 billion in Uber, the ride-sharing company,
right.
A huge investment, which shows you the shift toward diversifying outside oil for the Saudis. It also shows the global growth of Uber, a company that didn't even exist all that long ago.
Right. Isn't that interesting? So it's the Saudis. When we talk about sovereign wealth funds, you'll hear that term, and really we're talking about the Middle East. We're talking about these oil-rich nations that have a lot of money that are now making these sovereign wealth funds that are investment vehicles. So it's like giant, we would think of as hedge funds here in the U.S. that are investing in interesting opportunities across the globe. So the Saudis are trying to diversify away from oil. And one of the things that they're doing, which in the past they haven't really done, they've been very oil concentrated. So they're more vocal and it's more visible now that they're doing that. And we're starting to see them explore other opportunities. So the fact that they made essentially this, you know, private investment in Uber made a lot of headlines because because it's so big, it's very visible. And people are really talking about that. We're seeing a shift in how the Saudis are interacting with the global economy when it comes to oil and just in terms of trying to diversify and invest. And so it's really an interesting regime change on how they're approaching things over there.
Women still not allowed to drive cars, even for Uber.
Well, mm-hmm.
That's why they have Uber, so you can get a ride. You don't need to be driving around.
Yes.
Susan Schmitz with us. This is the Keller Business Managing Your Future weekly segment here. Susan, can you hang on?
Sure.
All right.
This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis, Brian Noonan sitting in with us today, and Susan Schmidt of Westwood Financial is talking with us. I want to ask you a question about investing, Susan.
Sure.
I saw that data out about people and investing, and that they're sort of torn about, should I invest? Should I put more money in this market? Or should I stay on the sidelines? Should I not invest? Is it because of the volatility? What's going on there, and how do you read that?
It is because of the volatility, and it's because we're getting so many mixed signals. So as we know, you know, the S&P is near one of its all-time highs. Now, the other indices are not that high, but we are seeing a lot of strength in the market. We've had a pretty good run since the bottom of that most recent dip in February. And what's interesting is right now the sentiment around the market for professional investors is really confused. So most people, generally, you've got three options. You're for investing, you're going to hold back, or you're neutral. Well, right now, most people are neutral, and that's very unusual because usually professional investors fall to one side or the other. And right now, the neutral sentiment is at an all-time high. 53% of professional investors are really curious on what to do for the summer because also summer months, and we've got an election year. Again, a lot of volatility, and people are trying to figure out how much risk and how much volatility can they ride out. The longer your time frame, the more you're able to look past that, but you still have to be conscious of it. So the bulls on the market are, so those people who are ready to invest think it's great and it's going to go up in the near future. That's at an all-time low at 17%. So stepping back from that, if you have a longer-term view and you're contrarian, then you want to do the opposite, and that would say, not many people are thinking this is positive. Usually when it just looks the worst, that's when everyone's getting out and it's just about to turn. So I think people are starting to talk about this data going, wow, maybe we overthought it, and maybe we should be thinking about putting some money in.
Well, if the professionals are that confused, what can the average investor do? What should the run-of-the-mill guy or woman who wants to, thinking about starting to invest, what should they do?
Well, I always say if you're the individual investor at home, just remember that you're competing with professionals in the market every day. And so I think it's more important for you than anyone else to have that long-term perspective because on the short term, it's impossible to keep up with the data flow and be competitive. If you win, it's more like going to the casino. It's luck. It's not because you've got a particular skill. You're really disadvantaged just because of the technology behind professional investors these days. So if you can think long term, then I think it's really a good time to start looking. We're seeing some confusion in the market. Generally, that's opportunity. And you can take a look for companies that you think have, you know, strong cash flows, strong base businesses. And those businesses, studies show, and this is statistically proven, those businesses that earn money that have strong cash flows. So that's like a yield, a cash flow yield coming back to the investor. So effectively, that yield is like an interest that you might earn on a savings account, except banks aren't paying interest right now. So that yield, those companies, they tend to do better over time. So look for those high-quality companies. If you can have a long time frame, don't get spooked by the near-term noise. Be prepared for volatility. And I'm always positive on the markets. I think there's plenty of room for good investing. Mm-hmm. Just take the time to really think about what you want and be prepared for volatility.
On that note, there was a very interesting report about millennials and investing and how their distrust of the markets. Oh, I mean, they lived through this one of the scariest financial crises ever, and is making them not want to invest. And then they also say, well, I don't have any investing knowledge. I've seen so many people get hurt, whether it's my parents or someone else, that they're not. And maybe also the college debt portion of that is impacting them. But isn't it important to get started? And what do you say to millennials who are saying, I just don't even feel like I trust the markets, or I don't feel like I want to be there?
Right. The dollar that you invest when you're younger is the most important dollar that you can invest, because it's going to be worth more than all the other dollars you put in the later years in your life, because it has that time to grow. So there's a phrase in investing, it's the time value of money. The longer time frame you have, the longer your dollar can stay invested, the bigger it can become. And that's really what you want to think about. So for the millennials who are scared, they did start coming into adulthood and paying attention to the markets at a time when the markets were really in turmoil. So it is understandable that they're a little spooked by this and standing back and saying, I don't really know. But there's plenty of resources online. I still think that long term, you need to be looking out for your own retirement, and investing in companies, being a shareholder is like owning a part of a business. And so having that as an investment for your future and your retirement is really important. So even though they're millennials, they're living at home with their parents 30% of the time. They can do this.
Hey, that's...
Put the money away.
Right, Susan... Put the money away. You know, go online. It's okay. Get some exposure to the markets and then start to appreciate that, because if you do it when you're in your 20s, those dollars are the ones that make all the difference right when you get to your 60s.
And tell your mom to do your laundry, because you're busy looking at the markets.
That's right.
So
right,
always good talking to you. We will talk to you again next Friday on the Keller Business Managing Your Future segment.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks.
Thanks, Susan.